Welcome to the City Club of Eugene, October 12, 2018 program. Oregon Senate District 4 and East Lane County Commissioner candidates, Floyd Przanski, Democrat, Scott Rodder, Republican, and Heather Bach, a Democrat. Is that right? Nonpartisan, excuse me, because that's my bad. Excuse me, y'all. Lane County Commissioner's a nonpartisan position. This is the sixth program of the 2018-2019 programming year. I'm Eric Richardson. I'm the president-elect of the City Club. Sponsors for the City Club are provided by our members and our sponsors. So you can become a member of the City Club at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. We have both business and in-kind sponsors, including our diamond sponsor, Kaiser Permanente. Kaiser Permanente exists to provide high-quality, affordable health care services and to improve the health of our members and the communities we serve. More information at www.kp.org. And our Sapphire sponsor, Summit Bank. Support for the City Club comes from Summit Bank, your local community bank, an independent community bank headquartered in Eugene. Summit Bank serves businesses and professionals in the Eugene, Springfield, and Central Oregon communities. Learn more about SBKO at sbko.bank. Today's moderator will be Tom Adams from KVAL Television Station. We also did invite Gary Williams to participate, but he declined the offer to attend today. Please welcome Tom Adams to the podium.
Thank you. All right, well, thank you, Eric, very much, and good afternoon, everyone. And we also want to welcome the radio listening audience at KLCC, Public Radio for Western Oregon. And, of course, the entire program is rebroadcast on KLCC Monday nights at 6:30. Today we have the two candidates for Oregon State Senate at District Number 4 in Oregon and also one of the runoff candidates for East Lane County Commissioner. Senate District 4 includes Cottage Grove and the remainder of Southern Lane County, a part of the county west of Eugene, including Vinita, Elmira, Notai, and Walton. District 4 also includes the upper McKenzie Valley from Dexter and Lowell and Oak Ridge and points up there. Also the upper McKenzie Valley. District 4 also includes northern Douglas County, including the cities of Yoncalla, Drain, Elkton, Sutherland, Oakland, and points in between. That is a huge district. Wow. Lane County Commission, District 5, East Lane District, is huge, covering all of the eastern half of Lane County except Springfield and adjacent unincorporated areas. District 5 also includes Marcola, Walterville, Pleasant Hill, the county south of Eugene, and also areas east of Crow and Lorain, also a very huge district for the county. Floyd Przanski is the candidate for the Democrat Independent and Working Families Party for the State Senate. He is the incumbent and has held the office of State Senate since 2004. Floyd holds degrees from Texas A&M University and South Texas College of Law and is employed as a municipal prosecutor when the state legislature is not in session. His government service includes the State House, the Lane County Assistant District Attorney. He was in that role for many, many years. Service on the Eugene Police Commission, also the Oregon Law Commission, and the BLM Timber Sale Advisory Board. Scott Rodder is the candidate of the Republican and Constitutional Parties for District 4 State Senate. He is a farmer and small business owner. Scott attended the American Business College in Chicago, Illinois, and is an internet publisher at www.lessgovisthebestgov.com, all one phrase. Scott's government experience includes work writing a bill reforming foreclosure sales in Oregon, which passed the state legislature as HB 4111, that the right number? In 2012. His campaign has emphasized highway safety, especially in the McKenzie River Valley and the Highway 126 corridor. On the county commission race, Heather Buck is a licensed principal broker in real estate and has worked as a special projects director for the St. Vincent de Paul Society of Lane County. She holds a BA in business administration from Seattle University. A native of Lane County, her government experience includes the Eugene Rental Housing Department Advisory Committee, the Springfield Manufactured Home Park Collaborative, also a co-chair of the Active Bethel Citizens Neighborhood Association, and also service on the Beltline Facility Plan Stakeholder Advisory Committee. And again, Gary Williams declined the invitation to attend today's forum at the City Club. Our candidates will now have 3-minute opening statements, and then followed by a handful of questions from yours truly, and then we'll give the rest of the time for questions to all of you. I would ask, when you write your questions on those white index cards, please specify if the question is more county-driven, questions Heather Buck can answer, or if it's a statewide issue for our state Senate candidates, so I don't get mixed up here. All right, who is first with an opening statement? We have not established that. Floyd? Floyd Przonski.
Good afternoon. Thank you. I want to really thank the Eugene City Club for this opportunity to have this forum. I think it's very important for us to have this type of dialogue. I'm going to give you the reasons why I am seeking re-election as State Senator for District 4 and why the voters should be supporting me as compared to my opponent. I have served in the State Senate District 4 since the end of 2003. During that time, I have been very successful in passing legislation that supports not only my constituents in District 4, but also all Oregonians. Here's a partial list of some of that legislation. Protecting Oregonians from data breaches. This is a bill we passed in 2007 that does in fact give us as consumers protection that was not there before. We are currently working on additional improvements through work groups that will be before the legislature in 2019. Modernizing the grand jury system, requiring recordation of those proceedings. Strengthening gun safety laws by closing loopholes on background checks. Providing small rural schools with additional funding, providing small businesses with access to additional capital funds, increasing CTE, which is the career and technical education in programs at K-12 public schools, criminal justice reforms, including trying to reduce the recidivism, taking away victimization. And on a more local level for District 4, establishing the Lane Area Commission on Transportation that gives the county greater decision-making on statewide projects. Prior to this was done at the state level, and the local communities did not have as much input. This was in conjunction with Representative Hovey, and we've been very pleased with the outcome to give us on a local perspective. Also expanding the access to health care services in rural communities. As an example, in Oak Ridge, we now have the Orchid Health Clinic, which is one that is providing much more assets for those individuals living in a rural community to have access for that work. Leadership and experience in working for all with all legislators is a very important issue to face all of the issues that we have as Oregonians. We need individuals that are not divisive and can and are willing to work as legislators with everyone with different perspectives and political perspectives. I've been known to have an open door policy in meeting with people. My opponent, on the other hand, has clearly demonstrated through his social media postings that he does not possess the skills or the effectiveness to being a legislator. He has berated individuals based on their ethnicity, their religious beliefs, as well as sexual orientation. He has also even posted that he believes that the U.S. Senate and the American people are better off with the death of John McCain, a true American hero. He is not right for District 4, and he's not right for Oregon. Lastly, Scott's top priority is to put rumble strips on Highway 126. ODOT will actually be doing this project in the fall of 2019, so clearly there's no reason for him to be going forward. That's truly his top priority. For those reasons, I'm asking for the voters in District 4 to re-elect me to continue to provide them a strong, independent voice in Salem. Thank you.
I'd like to opening statement from Scott Roeder for 3 minutes. 3 minutes.
Well, I didn't think the gloves would come off from the beginning. Good afternoon, people. I'm running for a seat in the Oregon legislature held by, you heard him, Floyd Prezansky. He's been there for 23 years. Now, most of you believe in term limits, especially if it concerns a Republican. But 23 years is long enough for anyone to represent this community. It's long enough for a boy to grow into a man, and it's long enough for a man to lose touch with reality. Does anyone know what this sign is that I'm holding up? It's similar to other signs I've placed along the McKenzie Highway for the past 3 months. But that sign's a little different. On September 24th, a man driving a motorcycle crashed into a tree near milepost 11. That sign was right in front of that tree. It's the last thing that man ever saw before he died. I put it there for a reason, because there have been at least 3 other accidents there at the exact same spot over the years. You'd think that 3 accidents at the same spot would provoke some kind of attention. But no, just like the fact that there are still no rumble strips, still no fog line reflectors to illuminate the edge of the road at night, and only a handful of precious guardrails to prevent a car or truck from winding up in the McKenzie River. Not a single thing has been done on that highway for safety over the past 23 years, as long as he's been your state senator and legislator. Why is that? There's been a failure to lead, and I know the reason why. If a truck hauling toxic chemicals, hazardous waste, or radioactive materials crashes and winds up in the water supply, winds up in the river, the water supply for 200,000 people, your water supply, will be seriously impacted for a long time, a lot longer than EWEB's backup well water system can realistically be expected to last. When that happens, you can lay the blame right on Senator Prezansky's doorstep and on the doorstep of Lee Beyer. Lee Beyer is the head of the Transportation Committee, and your senator is the head of the Public Task Force on Public Safety. In addition to over 8,000 accidents, 6,000 injuries, and 162 deaths over the past 21 years, there have been several close calls involving large trucks hauling hazardous chemicals. Last year, a tanker truck overturned and spilled 2,000 gallons of gasoline near the river. Luckily for us, it wasn't in the river. But it still precipitated a drastic cleanup effort costing millions of dollars, your dollars. Crossing your eyes, holding your breath, closing your eyes, crossing your fingers, and holding your breath is not a good way to make public policy. We simply must begin to reduce the risk to the river and to the highway before the unthinkable happens. The man who lost his life in the motorcycle accident died less than a way from the scene of 2 other multi-car collisions over the Labor Day weekend. One of those accidents also resulted in a fatality. Just one more thing to say. The most important task of a public official is public safety. I'd like to know what it's going to take for Mr. Prezansky to devote some time away from his other job as the chairman of the Marijuana Committee and focus on improving the safety of the McKenzie Highway. How many more people have to die before it receives the attention it deserves? Right now, Mr. Prezansky seems to care a lot more about whether people can get fired for smoking dope on the job than whether they get killed driving back and forth to work. And that sounds pretty dopey to me.
All right, 3 minute opening statement. We shift our attention to Lane County Commission Eastern Lane race and Heather Buck.
Thank you very much, City Club members, for having me today. My name is Heather Buck. I'm running for East Lane County Commissioner in District 5. I have a unique set of personal and professional experiences that I think we need on our County Commission board. I run a small business. I work as Special Projects Director for St. Vincent de Paul on many community-related events and projects. I just got back from the dedication of the Saginaw Mobile Home Park this morning. Those are the kind of county-wide projects I want to work on. I also am the mother of a small child, the spouse of a military officer, and voices like mine are currently not on our county commissioner board, and they need to be reflective of our community. I believe in a three-legged stool for the success of our county. That means we need to make sure that everybody has housing that they can afford and is accessible. They make sure that they have a good paying job with benefits, and they also have access to health care. If any one of those three legs should fall, the other two quickly fall with it. So it's imperative that we work on these things collectively, together, and those are the kinds of things that I've been working professionally on for many, many years at a grassroots level within our county, and I would like to earn your vote to be able to work on those issues on a larger level on the county Board of Commissioners. Thank you.
All right, thank you, candidates, for your opening statements. We're collecting your questions on the white index cards, making them as legible as possible, and Randy Prince will keep collecting those questions as you prepare those at your tables. Just a few opening questions, perhaps, to begin our discussion, and candidates, you'll have 1 minute each on answers for this. Kind of a statewide question here for our state Senate candidates. Oregon has an overwhelmed and underfunded foster care system, with the Department of Human Services on the hot seat here as of late. What has to be done to fix the foster care system in Oregon to make and have Oregon make the investments necessary to make it work the way it's supposed to? Senator Przanski, first.
All right, thank you. Tom, Floyd Przanski speaking, I don't understand we're supposed to put our names on before each time. So Floyd Przanski. What we need to be doing is actually having a much larger discussion than what we've had at the state level. It's very important for me to ensure that the governor and the governor's office, along with the legislature, are calling and convening those individuals that actually have the aptitude to move forward. One of the issues that we have is a lack of resources. When I say resources, I'm talking about dollars and cents to actually have a system that can actually provide the services that are necessary and needed for the foster care. We also need to ensure that there's proper background screening of the individuals who want to serve in those capacities. We need to make certain that the children that are at risk are actually having the type of comfort and directions and monitoring that they need from a foster care parent, and in many cases those individuals do not have those qualifications and should not be serving those positions.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Scott Roeder, response to the question on foster care in the state.
This is Scott Roeder. There are many problems with our society, folks, today. They can't all be solved by government. A lot of the problem comes from the condition of the human heart. Government can't solve that problem. The reason the foster care system may be overwhelmed has a lot more to do with the fact that the media, the entertainment industry, the music industry, the game industry, the gambling industry, and a lot of industries are basically destroying what's left of character and honor in our society. I don't think that government's the answer to that kind of a problem or many of the problems you expect government to solve. But if we'd start supporting some of the organizations, non-governmental organizations, that deal with human beings on a human level, we might have less of a problem for Mr. Przanski to spend some of your tax dollars on.
Lane County, a county perspective, a question now. Lane County Public Health last month released a comprehensive report on suicide and suicide rates, and some of the numbers were just really appalling. The Lane County suicide rate is 50% greater than the national average. One in four deaths by suicide was a veteran. So, Heather, what additional investments in county mental health and or suicide prevention programs would you support?
Heather Buck here. Well, I was very pleased to hear a couple of weeks ago that our senators, Wyden and Merkley, were able to bring some federal dollars down to the Lane County area in order to address some mental health and opioid crisis that we have here locally, which is a good step in order to get to a point where we can also seek and treat those that have depression or suicidal tendencies. We clearly don't want to have that distinction here in the county, and we want to be able to work more on in our public health department on those particular subjects. I look forward to getting feedback from our health officials and what other kinds of programs we can provide, especially in our rural districts. A large part of East Lane or District 5 is rural, and it's imperative that they get access to health care on a regular basis in order to treat those symptoms.
Okay, thank you. All right, we'll start going through your questions that you've come up with at your tables. And this is a question for all the candidates. Do you support resilient forestry practices? So forestry is the topic here. How can these practices be encouraged for private timber companies to create healthier forests and soil that can be effective as carbon sequestration and helping reverse global warming? So healthy forest practices and policies. Scott, do you want to go first on that?
This is Scott Roeder. My position on forestry and logging is that the United States federal government does neither have the capacity nor the desire, even if they could, they can't possibly manage 700 million acres of public land, which is essentially what they're trying to do. That's why every year our forests burn to the ground. It's my hope and would be one of my goals that Oregon assume control of its own public land, just like the other 11 Western states do likewise. And when you have 12 states going about managing public land differently, I assume, sooner or later, there will be a program that works, and it will be adopted by the rest of the states. Right now, you have one size, top-down, fits-all approach from the federal government. I would like to see Oregon assume control of its own public land and try something different rather than letting our forests burn to the ground every year.
Okay, time's up. Thank you. Floyd?
Floyd Przanski. Our forestry issues that we have at the state are different from what we have on the national level. It needs to be recognized that in Oregon, about 52 to 54% of the public lands are in fact controlled by the federal government. This is one that's actually one that I believe that we have a balance that's there. We should maintain that. We should encourage the federal government to do what they're supposed to be doing and working in conjunction with the state. I do not believe that it is in the best interest of Oregonians or for the rest of the country for each state to basically take over the federal public lands. Instead, what we need to be doing is working together as to making certain that we have a program that actually is viable for extraction reasonable and a basis that can actually be accommodated and maintained of forest products. Clearly, we use forest products. We're seeing great strides in Oregon of using cross laminates, which is actually giving us much better strength in building materials and actually having a renewable source that we can make certain there are, in fact, individual jobs for qualified individuals throughout throughout the state, including and especially in rural areas.
Okay, all right. Heather, any forestry comment you'd like to make?
Sure, Heather Buck here. I absolutely support sustainable practices in our forestry division, and we need to make sure we continue to also protect our clean water, our iconic steelhead and salmon. On the county level, you know, we need to be able to reach out to our rural communities, create a balance, and also make sure that we can really encourage good forestry practices for our next generation. I remember growing up and being able to play in the forest behind my house, and that's what I want for my daughter as well. I want her to be able to be healthy while she's out there, and I also want to be able to promote the good resource that we do have here locally.
Okay. More of a county question here, Heather Buck. What will you do to bring more affordable housing to the Lane County area?
Affordable housing is my professional background. It's something that I care deeply about. I have been working in the affordable housing area for over a decade and bring a lot of experience that we would desperately need on our Board of Commissioners. We're in the second largest housing crunch in the nation, second only to Seattle, and we need to be bringing every tool that we've got in our toolbox here locally. I want to be able to create more public-private partnerships, bring everybody together, and figure out what great ideas do we have out there that we need to utilize, whether it's in a up economy or a down economy, to make sure that we have enough people housed. It is the source of much of our homelessness and crime that we see. It is critical that we address it as fast as possible, really look at the low-hanging fruit that we've got that we can utilize first, and then build on the partnerships that we've been able to make throughout our community.
Okay, thank you. Next question for the state senate candidates related to budget. And the question is, how much, as far as percentage of our tax revenue in the state, goes to administrative costs as opposed to direct services?
Floyd Przanski, I'd be very frank with you. I do not know the actual number or percentage that is broken out. I think in an attempt to answer the question, as we do know, that does in fact require a oversight with administrative services, but I do not have a percentage as to how that plays out. It would differ from department to department, agency to agency, as to the services they're providing and the need for oversight.
Okay, all right. Scott Roeder, any response to that, or
Not? I do have a response to that.
Okay.
It's interesting that a man who's been in your legislature for 23 years doesn't know where your money's going and how much is going to administration.
Another statewide perspective question here. When entering federal buildings, people go through metal detectors. Why are these kinds of safety features not being installed at schools to protect our children? Scott Roeder.
That's a good question. That's one of the things that I would do to make schools a safe place for children to learn. Metal detectors outside of the school, they should be as safe as a courthouse or an airport terminal. I'd also like to see teachers have a taser in their purse or in their pocket, and a buzzer to alert an armed security guard somewhere on the premises. And I do not think any further infringements of the Second Amendment will solve the problem of school safety or violence in this country, for that matter, because it is not the weapon that we have to worry about. It's the, again, heart.
Floyd Przanski, in response to that question, these are local decisions as school boards. If you remember, we still have local school boards that are actually make the decisions as to how each of the school districts establish what they want within their safety areas. Clearly, there are some schools that have, in fact, looked at, and I do believe in Portland there may be some that are actually using some type of procedures in this area. With the interest of the state, this is another area of resource as to whether or not this is the appropriate approach. What we've always had a desire to do is maintain local control, and this is really a local control issue as to each school district within the state to make the determination of what they feel is most appropriate for their own school districts.
All right, next question for all three of you, and this has to do with two of the more high-profile statewide ballot measures. Your opinions on ballot measures 103, which would prohibit sales taxes on the sales of groceries, and ballot measure 104, I believe that is the measure that would require a 3/5 supermajority vote on any legislative bill that would raise revenues, if I have that right. Heather Buck.
Heather here. So measure 103 is the 3/5 majority.
No, 103 is the prohibition on any sales taxes on groceries.
Ah, groceries.
There you go. Yeah.
I, like many of you, get mixed up with the numbers versus the actual measure. I want to make sure I get that right. So I, too, don't believe that we need to be taxing groceries. However, in this particular bill, it's about more than groceries. And it was done and written in a way that's confusing to most people. It taxes some things and not others, and done in a very private manner, and not very democratic for the rest of us who are actually trying to decipher this particular measure. I think it needs to be in a more democratic way, in which everybody can flesh out those particular issues before it goes to a measure. And then 104, which is the three-fifths, the three-fifths majority measure. In that particular measure, I believe that we, I'll finish up real quick, I know I'm running out of time here. In that particular measure, I believe that we as voters, I trust that we as voters vote for the people that we believe in, and they go to the legislator and make the decisions on our behalf. So I really believe that we need to be voting for those people who will ultimately make that decision on the legislative level.
Okay. Floyd?
Floyd Brzezinski. Regarding measure 103, I would tell you this is a Trojan horse. This is a measure that basically is packaged to say that your groceries are going to be taxed. There's not been a tax measure that's come before the legislature that has been worked by the legislature that did not have some type of exemptions for what we call groceries. When you look at the definition, it's any raw or processed food or beverages. Really what they're going after is the sugary drinks, so they won't be taxed. Regarding 104, and I think the other thing is very important, this would put it in the Constitution where it does not belong. These are issues that should be at the statutory level, not in the Constitution. Same thing with measure number 104. What we have is another attempt to put something into the Constitution that would take away your Republican form of government. This is something, as Ms. Buck has said, we need to ensure that you have individuals that are competent to make decisions at the state level as to what needs to occur, and we don't need to set up these arbitrary numbers and formulas to make it more difficult to run the state. That's one of the reasons we have the problems we have today.
Scott Roeder, please, on those two ballot measures.
Scott Roeder. Well, Republican form of government, folks, that's why I'm running, to give you a Republican government. Generally speaking, I'm not for raising taxes, any taxes. I think the government has plenty of your money already, and I think they need to prioritize better and use it more wisely. So as far as the three-fifths majority required to make a fee a tax, I support that measure. And as far as the grocery tax, I do not support that measure. I'd like to see the government manage its budget before you give them more of your money.
Okay, next question is more a Lane County slanted here for Heather Buck. The question being, how have you changed or had a role in the St. Vincent de Paul's RV park in Oak Ridge? Was that a recent project up there in the Oak Ridge area?
I did that project several years ago, 3 or 4 years ago now. I've been tasked at St. Vincent de Paul as their special projects director to redevelop really dilapidated mobile home parks throughout our community that service a lot of very vulnerable communities. Oak Ridge was one that we did a couple of years ago, very successful with a lot of collaboration from state, city, local individuals and groups. And this morning just came back from the dedication for our most recent one, which is in Saginaw, where I also partnered with Energy Trust of Oregon, as well as the Bonneville Power Association, where we not only redeveloped the park, but added a lot of solar systems for a net zero energy change program, the first of its kind in the Pacific Northwest. So those are near and dear to my heart. They also make key changes within our community so that we don't have parts of our community that are left out and really attract a lot of crime and a lot of energy into our social services and emergency preparedness and emergency services.
You're listening to KLCC, informing and inspiring listeners for more than a half century. Broadcasting in HD at KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, KLFR Reedsport 89.1, and at 88.1, KLFO Florence, KMPQ Roseburg, and KLBR Bend. KLCC is a service of Lane Community College.
Question for the state senate candidates, and I'm not sure if we have the name of this concept here. The question being, the National Popular Vote Contract has never made it for a Senate vote. I don't know if this is a statewide or national issue. I don't know. It's a local issue. What can you predict will happen for it this session? The National Popular Vote Contract. Scott?
The question was, what do I think will happen with it, or what do I feel about it?
Well, in our country, Mr. Pruzanski refers to a Republican form of government here, though remains to be seen whether you'll have one. We have a system of electing, at least on a national level, candidates through an electoral college. I'm not for overturning that. In order to become president of the United States, it's not sufficient to just win the popular vote. You have to win a majority of votes in a majority of states. And I think every state should follow that rule. And the reason Donald Trump's president is because he did that. The reason Hillary Clinton's not president is because she only received a majority of votes in the country, not in the majority of states. It's that simple.
Floyd Pruzanski, regarding the National Popular Vote, I actually expect it to go to the floor in 2019. This is a concept that we would actually support around the country, other states that want to go to to the popular vote model and do away with the Electoral College. I understand the Electoral College had its place in its time. It's no longer necessary, and clearly we are defining who is going to make the final decision. Why shouldn't we allow for individuals throughout this country to be able to cast their vote for who they believe is to be the elected to be the president of this country and be able to have their vote count? Look around the world and look at how we have other democracies, and when we talk about Republican form of government, we're talking about small r, is basically set up where it is a popular vote. We are the only country I know of that has an arbitrary system now that actually overrides the voice of the people, and I will be supporting the compact if we and when we do, in fact, get it to the floor in 2019.
Another voting-related question here from the audience related to the Motor Voter Program. Given, I guess question for all three of you, given the Motor Voter Program and the DMV is supporting this, how can safeguards be created now to further protect and prevent fraud in voter registration through the Motor Voter Program? Scott?
Tom, I'd like to first respond to Mr. Brzezinski's. Folks, if you had a popular vote, Oregon wouldn't count. That's the first thing. The only votes that would count would be in New York and New York City and Manhattan primarily, Los Angeles and Chicago. Your vote wouldn't matter under a popular scheme like Mr. Brzezinski supports. And by the way, if you want to change the Constitution, you can't do it with a law. You have to do it through a constitutional amendment. If our Constitution and our Republic were to mean anything anymore to some folks.
Let's go to another question statewide, public schools. Oregon graduation rates are slowly improving in the high school level, but Oregon's still ranking about third worst in the nation for graduation rates, although slowly on the rebound now. Briefly, what's being done to improve the rates and help Oregon catch up at least to the middle of the pack for graduation rates within 4 years? Senator?
Floyd Pruzanski, there's been an effort both within the legislature as well as in the governor's office to establish a different protocol to ensure that we are giving individual students the opportunity to actually exceed in their schooling. One of the areas that I mentioned earlier was in the CTE programs. where you're not taking in for granted that every individual student is going to be going to college. What we need to make certain is that we have individuals that are invested and interested and moving forward in their education process. The CTE has actually shown, as many of us in this room who had shop when you were going through junior high and high school, to be reinvigorated and actually getting to have individual students actually respond. So we need to be working to ensure that we have not only the programs in place for those individual students, but we also have the guidance and the resources that are necessary to provide those programs.
Mr. Roeder.
The government has plenty of your resources, folks. The reason people aren't learning has nothing to do with money. Money may be the reason that some people don't want to become teachers. It's no reason why students don't want to learn. You need to use your head, folks. Money doesn't solve all the problems in this country. And giving the government more of it isn't going to do that either.
Another question. This is for a county question for Heather Buck. Lane County used to have a bookmobile that provided library services to rural residents. Do you have any ideas for how to bring the library services back to us? Must be a rural resident.
I wish we did have a bookmobile that went out to our smaller communities. Our rural communities really do feel forgotten in a variety of ways. And one of those is, as you mentioned, with schools and reading and writing. All the afternoon activities that we once knew when we were kids are not necessarily there for our students now. And I would be encouraged to find ways in which we could bring more reading and book materials out to our small communities. I know when I'm out in East Lane on the properties that I manage and run, we have little libraries in our communities just for that reason, and make sure that we have people come in and volunteer to read to our children. So I would look forward to working with our library system, and if there's a way in which we can partner with them, our schools, or any other smaller organizations within East Lane, which we can encourage that.
Back to a statewide question, and the 800-pound gorilla has not been asked the question. I will ask that question right now. The PERS debate. Oregon still struggling with an unfunded public pension debt topping $22 billion as we speak. So, question to both our state Senate candidates, when is the state going to really come to grips with the PERS debt crisis? Mr. Roeder?
Well, that's a good question. I think we ought to hear what the senator has to say on that. As far as I'm concerned, Tier 1 employees that have since retired, we're not talking about current PERS members, Tier 1 employees who are since retired, I would try to voluntarily get them to understand the seriousness of the problem first. And this came from a volunteer, from a Tier 1 employee. And see if they would be willing to voluntarily give up 2% of their rainbow retirement. And if that didn't work, then I would take the next steps. But I would like to see a voluntary effort to communicate to Tier 1 retirees since gone by the seriousness of the problem, get them to do it voluntarily. Mm-hmm. Two or 3% of relinquishing their retirement savings would probably take care of the budget shortfall, or would go a long way to doing so.
Floyd?
Thank you. Floyd Przanski. Regarding the PERS issue, this is an ongoing issue that we've had and we've been trying to address, and we found that the agreement that was made by the legislature back in the late 70s, early 80s, has come forward and has actually demonstrated some of the wrongs that occurred through that process. Specifically, I do not believe in what we've seen in the high-profile situations with football coaches, doctors at OHSU, who were receiving funding from outside of the state that was actually incorporated into the state funding, and as if it was paid by the state. And that is how we actually have found ourselves with these very large payouts to a very few number of people. The vast majority of individuals that are on PERS have actually done their work, entered into agreement with the state or the local government to provide a service, and that they would actually get a retirement based on that work. At this point, the courts have already addressed this three times where we have tried to pass legislation to accommodate some of the issues that we have before us. Unfortunately, the court has given us an ultimatum in saying what we can and cannot do. And for many people, they think that we can just go ahead and break a contract. The only way we can't break the contract without going to default or claiming bankruptcy for the state, and this state is not bankrupt.
Okay. Question for Heather Buck here. At a candidates forum last spring, East Lane County Commissioner Williams said he did not believe in human-caused climate change. Excuse me. What is Ms. Buck's grasp on the importance of Lane County taking action on this issue, climate change?
I absolutely do believe we have a climate change crisis right now that we need to deal with as soon as possible, not only on a national level, but on a state and local level. I would encourage the county to be able to look at where we can, as a community, find ways in which we can contribute to solutions to our climate crisis. That could be from in a variety of ways, looking at our fleets, looking at our equipment, and how we can incorporate that into the daily lives of members here in our community.
Question to our state Senate candidates. Please share a couple or a few, within 1 minute time, share a couple of successes you have had recently and two concerns you hope that the legislature would move on soon. Floyd.
All right. Floyd Przanski. There's been a lot of areas that I am very comfortable moving forward on that we've already have seen great results. As I mentioned in my opening, I think the data breach was one of the first things. We as individual citizens should not have to be worried about people breaching into corporations or other holders of personal information and using it against us in identity theft. This is one of the areas that we've have gotten great success by having the bill that I ushered through in 2007. And as I mentioned, we're working on updating it now that it's been 10 years. We have a work group that's been ongoing, approximately 30 individuals. And this is part of the goal that I feel that I bring to the table is getting people together to work forward. The other areas that I think that are very important is dealing with some of the resource issues that we need. And we've already had some interest in looking at having additional resources for K-12 schools and also dealing with the climate change areas. And we are, in fact, going to see a bill that will be dealing with clean energy jobs in 2019, which I think is extremely important for this state to move forward.
Okay. All right, Mr. Roeder, I guess maybe modify the question. What would be your early short-term goals if elected?
The original question was, what successes have we had? I'd like to respond to that.
Okay.
In 1995, I wrote a bill after the city of Eugene foreclosed on one of your neighbors, Jack Neely. They took his house and they sold it for the amount of a sewer lien because they were trying to get residents in Santa Clara to all hook up to the Eugene Municipal Wastewater Treatment Plant. They sold his house for $5,000, the exact amount of a sewer lien, folks. And your mayor at the time and Representative Kitty Piercy, Peter Sorensen, and Floyd Przanski didn't do anything to stop that. I wrote the bill. It didn't get a hearing that year. Floyd didn't even vote on it. It died in committee. 15 years later, I met Floyd at a gas station. I handed him the bill, still on the seat next to me, and asked him to get a hearing for it. He did not get a hearing for it. And the next year, he personally killed the bill. But the following year, it passed the legislature unanimously. That's thanks to me. And my opponent, your senator, took credit for it. As to what I'd like the legislature to do, he talks about local control more. I'd like to see more home rule for counties. There are 36 counties in Oregon, and currently the state's run by about three.
All right, we have time for one more question, almost at 1 o'clock this afternoon. Let's, Heather, let's give you the last question, a Lane County Sheriff Patrol question. Response times for rural calls by the Sheriff's Office still a concern. So what would be your stance as far as supporting greater investment in the Sheriff's Office to get more deputies on the road and reduce these response times? What are your thoughts on that?
As somebody who lives in unincorporated Lane County, I also rely on sheriff's service. And it is a chronic issue that I've heard about throughout our community, anywhere from up the McKenzie all the way down south in South Lane. They are in a position where they can do only so much with what they have. I would encourage working with the sheriff's department as much as possible for education and outreach into these communities, see where we can come together on maybe some additional funding if that's palpable for the people in our community. If not, how can we find new innovative ways to address each individual issue within the sheriff's purview that we can, whether that be, you know, safety measures or speeding, or how can we partner with some of our small rural towns in order to make sure that they have some coverage? So I look forward to working with the sheriff on those particular issues.
Okay. All right, time now. Thank you for responding to all those questions today, candidates. Time for closing statements from our candidates, and they'll have all approximately a minute and a half for their closing statements. Shall we go in reverse order? What order do you want? Okay. Scott Roeder, let's have you go first, all right, for a closing statement.
Sure, Tom. Well, from the very beginning, folks, you'll notice that my character was attacked. You'll also notice that I did nothing to attack my opponent's character. I'd like to say that there are many things I know which are important to you, and Floyd and I disagree on many of them, maybe even most of them. School safety, the Second Amendment, law enforcement, federal immigration law, sanctuary cities, and taxpayer funding of elected surgeries, including abortions. The list goes on. But the single most important issue to all of you is, and it should be, public safety. That's the top goal of a publicly elected official. And Senator Prezansky's failure to obtain the necessary safety improvements for 23 years should not be rewarded with another 4 years. As far as ODOT claiming, he claims ODOT's willing to put them on finally. Well, if they are, it's no thanks to him. And I personally talked to ODOT, and they said it isn't on the list. It's just on their radar map. Thank you all for coming. I really do appreciate it.
All right, Senator Prezansky, closing statement.
Yeah, thank you very much. This is a situation, first I need to address what Scott has said about my participation in House Bill 4111. I was actually a co-chief sponsor of that bill. I actually carried the bill on the floor of the Senate, and we did, in fact, get a unanimous vote. So I was very involved in that bill. Did not kill his bill, as he thinks. It's just the process. It didn't make it through a committee I had no direct control over or participation in. Regarding for the voters of Senate District 4, you haven't had an opportunity to hear us today, and I ask you for your support. Clearly, Mr. Otter is one of an individual who does not value the differences and separations of individuals as who they are and what they bring to the table. I've been known in my work to have an open door policy, bringing all to the table and working through whatever issues we have as a state. We do not need an individual who does not believe that a person should be different sexually in their orientation than what he believes they should have, or what an individual should, what type of nationality or ethnicity they have. This is exactly what has divided our country. This is exactly what we do not need in this state, and that is one of the reasons, and I believe that I am better suited to doing the work based on the demonstration that I've had in working with people across the state and working with my colleagues, no matter where they come from, to ensure that we are, in fact, providing for all Oregonians, not the select not the ones that we think are better than others. We are all here together, and we should be working together in ensuring that our kids have the opportunity to learn, to advance, and have jobs in this great state. And we should also have the ability to control and maintain the livelihoods that we have as individuals, and that we should, in fact, be welcoming and embracing all of us for the differences that we bring to the table that make this state so great. Thank you.
All right, and Heather Buck, I am told your opening statement ran a little short, so 2 minutes.
All right, thank you. My name's Heather Buck, running for East Lane County Commissioner. Thank you, City Club, for hosting us today. I appreciate the time and being included in your discussions in the upcoming election. As I mentioned in the opening statement, I come to the table with a lot of different personal and professional experiences that we need on our County Commissioner Board. As a successful small business owner, I know what it means to sign the checks for individuals that live and work in our community. And that's something that in our small towns, we really need more business acumen and encouragement, mentorship, accelerator programs in order to encourage businesses to grow and keep our small towns sustainable, especially when they're off the I-5 corridor and they don't have the same opportunities as a lot of other small towns. Also a special projects director for St. Vincent de Paul, I work on really deep community-based projects with vulnerable populations on a regular basis, including our veterans. I want to be able to work on those issues on a greater level on the county and know that I can bring a breadth of experience and knowledge with me that I can contribute back to our community. And the third of those three legs of the stool that I mentioned earlier is access to health care. And we need to make sure that we increase our access to health care, especially to our small towns and rural communities, so that we make sure that they're healthy, they can pay their bills, and they have a safe place to land at night. I really encourage everybody to get out to vote in this election cycle by November 6th, and I'm here to ask for your vote. Thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you, candidates, all three of you. Eric has the final word.
I'd like to thank Tom Adams. One more time for Tom Adams today. Before we thank our speakers, there are a few quick announcements. We'd like to thank public radio station KLCC 89.7 for airing the City Club programs on Mondays at 6:30 p.m. And thank you to Community Television of Lane County, Cable Channel 29, for televising recent City Club programs. We'd also like to thank our gold sponsors. That would be Sacred Earth Botanicals, the Oregon Country Fair, the University of Oregon Government and Community Relations Office, and a special thanks to our in-kind sponsors, KRVM 91.9 Radio, Dot Dotson's Photography, PAC Info, and Simplified Computing LLC. And of course, Lane Community College, KLCC Radio. City Club programs are broadcast on public radio, station KLCC 89.7, 6:30 on Monday nights. Next week, we'll have candidates for the Oregon 4th Congressional District race with Peter DeFazio and Art Robinson, and Mike Bellstein. For more details and information about future programs, you can find that information at City Club, at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. Again, let's take this time to thank our speakers today, Floyd Przanski, Scott Roeder, and Heather Bach. Thank you, and this concludes today's program. See you next week.